Welcome to Business Boost, your go-to revision podcast for AQA A-level business. I'm your host, and today we're diving deep into one of the most rewarding topics on the entire specification: managers, leadership, and decision-making. This is section 3.2, and if you get this right, you are looking at some seriously juicy marks, especially in those 25-mark essay questions. So grab a pen, get comfortable, and let's get into it. Let me start by telling you why this topic matters. Every single business, from a corner shop to a global corporation, needs people to make decisions and lead others. The AQA examiners absolutely love giving you a case study about a real-sounding business, maybe a manufacturing firm, maybe a tech startup, and asking you to analyze how the leadership style is affecting the workforce. Your job is to go beyond just naming a style. You need to apply it, analyze it, and evaluate it. That's the difference between a grade C and a grade A. Right, let's start with the fundamentals. What is the difference between a manager and a leader? This comes up more than you'd think. A manager is primarily concerned with the day-to-day administration of a business. They plan, organize, coordinate, and control resources. Think of a manager as someone who does things right. A leader, on the other hand, is someone who inspires, motivates, and sets a vision. A leader does the right things. Now, in practice, the same person often does both, but examiners want you to recognize that these are conceptually distinct roles. If a question asks you to distinguish between management and leadership, give a clear contrasting definition and then apply it to the context in the extract. Now let's move on to the big one, the Tannenbaum-Schmidt Leadership Continuum. This is a model published in 1958 by Robert Tannenbaum and Warren Schmidt, and it describes a spectrum of leadership behaviors ranging from fully autocratic at one end to fully democratic at the other. The continuum has seven specific points, and you need to know all of them, starting from the most autocratic end. First, the manager tells, they make the decision and announce it. Second, the manager sells, they make the decision, but then tries to persuade the team it's a good idea. Third, the manager suggests, they present a tentative decision and invites comment. Fourth, the manager consults, they present the problem, get suggestions, then decides. Fifth, the manager joins, they define the limits and asks the team to decide together. Sixth, the manager delegates, they pass decision-making authority to the team within defined boundaries. And seventh, and this is the one students often miss, the manager abdicates. This is where the manager gives up control entirely. This is sometimes called laissez-faire leadership, and it's generally considered risky unless the team is highly skilled and self-motivated. Here is a really important exam tip. When a question gives you a case study and asks you to identify where on the Tannenbaum-Schmidt continuum a manager sits, do not just say autocratic or democratic. You need to identify the specific point. For example, if the extract says the manager presented the problem to the team and asked for their input before making the final decision, that is the consult's position, point four. That level of precision is what gets you into the higher mark bands. Now, what factors influence where a manager sits on the continuum? Tannenbaum and Schmidt identified several. The nature of the task matters. A crisis situation often demands a more autocratic style because speed is critical. The skill and experience of the workforce matters. Highly trained professionals may resent being told what to do and perform better with delegation. The personality of the manager matters. Some managers are naturally more controlling. And the organizational culture matters. A business with a strong hierarchical culture will tend to sit further left on the continuum. Let's move on to the Blake-Mouton managerial grid. This model was developed by Robert Blake and Jane Mouton in 1964, and it maps management styles on a two-dimensional grid. The x-axis represents concern for production, how focused the manager is on getting results, hitting targets, and achieving efficiency. The y-axis represents concern for people, how much the manager values relationships, staff well-being, and team morale. Both axes run from 1 to 9. There are 5 key management styles on the grid, and you absolutely must know their coordinates and characteristics. First, impoverished management at coordinates 1, 1. This manager has minimal concern for both production and people. They do the bare minimum to keep their job. This is generally considered the worst management style. Second, authority compliance management, also called task management, at coordinates 9, 1. High concern for production, low concern for people. Think of a strict factory floor supervisor who cares only about output and treats workers as a means to an end. Third, Country Club Management at coordinates 1-9, high concern for people, low concern for production. This manager prioritizes a happy, comfortable workplace, but at the expense of performance. The name Country Club tells you everything. It's pleasant, but not very productive. Fourth, middle of the road management. At coordinates 5-5, this manager tries to balance both concerns, but doesn't excel at either. It's adequate, but not optimal. And fifth, the ideal, team management, at coordinates 9-9, high concern for both production and people. This manager believes that motivated, valued employees naturally produce excellent results. Blake and Mouton considered this the most effective style. Now, here is a classic mistake that examiners see every year. Students confuse Country Club with team management. Remember, Country Club is 1-9, high people, low production. Team management is 9-9, high on both. If you mix those up in an exam, you will lose marks. A good memory trick. Think of a country club as a place where people relax and socialize but don't get much work done. That's 1-9. When applying the Blake Mouton grid in an exam, you need to do more than just name the style. You need to plot the coordinates explicitly. Write something like, this manager would be positioned at approximately 8-2 on the Blake Mouton grid, indicating high concern for production but low concern for people. Then explain the implications. How does this affect staff motivation? How does it link to theories like Maslow or Hertzberg? That chain of reasoning is what earns AO3 marks. Right, let's talk about decision-making. AQA wants you to understand two broad approaches, scientific decision-making and intuitive decision-making. Scientific decision-making is a structured, rational, data-driven process. It follows a logical sequence. Identify the problem, gather data, generate options, evaluate options using quantitative tools, make a decision, implement it, and review. The key quantitative tool you need to master here is the decision tree. A decision tree is a diagram that maps out possible decisions and their probable outcomes. It uses two types of nodes. A square node represents a decision point, where the manager chooses between options. A circle node represents a chance event, where the outcome is uncertain and governed by probability. Each branch from a circle node has a probability assigned to it, and all probabilities from a single chance node must add up to 1.0. The key calculation is the expected value. The formula is expected value equals the sum of each outcome multiplied by its probability. So if an outcome of 500,000 pounds has a probability of 0.7 and an outcome of 100,000 pounds has a probability of 0.3, the expected value is 0.7 times 500,000 plus 0.3 times 100,000, which equals 350,000 plus 30,000, which equals 380,000 pounds. But here's the mistake that costs students marks every single year. You must subtract the initial cost of the decision to get the net gain. If that option costs 200,000 pounds to implement, the net gain is 380,000 minus 200,000, which equals 180,000 pounds. Always state the formula before you plug in the numbers. This guarantees you method marks even if you make an arithmetic error. Now, the critical evaluation point about decision trees, the expected value is not a guaranteed outcome. It is a weighted average based on estimated probabilities. Those probabilities are subjective. They are someone's best guess. If the probabilities are wrong, the whole calculation is misleading. In a 25-mark essay, this is a powerful evaluative point. The quantitative output of a decision tree is only as reliable as the quality of the probability estimates feeding into it. Intuitive decision-making, by contrast, relies on experience, gut feeling, and judgment rather than formal data analysis. This can be faster and more appropriate in rapidly changing environments where data is scarce or unreliable. A highly experienced CEO might make a brilliant intuitive decision that a data model would never have suggested. However, intuitive decisions are prone to cognitive bias, personal prejudice, and inconsistency. The AQA specification also asks you to consider the influence of stakeholders on decision-making. Stakeholders, including shareholders, employees, customers, suppliers, and the government, all have different levels of power and interest. A decision that maximizes shareholder returns might damage employee morale. A decision that satisfies customers might increase costs. High-level evaluation means weighing these competing stakeholder interests against the quantitative data from tools like decision trees. Now let's talk about exam technique. This is where marks are won and lost. For shorter questions, typically 4 to 8 marks, use the Peel structure: point, evidence, explanation, link. Make your point clearly, support it with specific knowledge from the case study or your own understanding, explain the mechanism, how does this cause that, and then link back to the question. For 12-mark questions, you need 2 or 3 well-developed paragraphs, each following Peel plus a brief conclusion. Examiners are looking for AO1 knowledge, AO2 application to the context, and AO3 analysis of the chain of reasoning. For 25-mark essays, the structure is a brief introduction that defines your terms and sets up your argument, 2 or 3 paragraphs arguing one side, 2 or 3 paragraphs arguing the other side, and a sustained conclusion that directly answers the question. The command phrase, "to what extent," requires a clear, justified judgment. Do not sit on the fence. Examiners reward candidates who commit to a position and defend it with evidence. A powerful evaluation technique for this topic is what I call the "it depends on" factor. Ask yourself, does the success of this leadership style depend on the skill level of the employees? Does it depend on the type of task, routine, or creative? Does it depend on the organizational culture? A response that identifies and explains these contingency factors will score in the top mark band for AO4. Common mistakes to avoid. Number 1, confusing the axes of the Blake-Mouton grid. Always remember, X-axis is concern for production, Y-axis is concern for people. Number 2, treating decision tree expected values as guaranteed outcomes. They are weighted averages based on estimated probabilities. Number 3, giving generic definitions of autocratic or democratic leadership without referencing the specific nuances of the Tannenbaum-Schmidt continuum. Number 4, forgetting to subtract the initial cost when calculating net gain. And number 5, in 25-mark essays, writing a conclusion that just summarizes your arguments rather than directly answering the specific question asked. Now let's do a quick-fire recall quiz. I'll ask the question, pause, and then give you the answer. Ready? Question 1. What are the 7 points on the Tannenbaum-Schmidt continuum from most autocratic to most democratic? Answer: tells, sells, suggests, consults, joins, delegates, abdicates. Question 2. What are the coordinates of country club management on the Blake-Mouton grid? Answer: 1-9, high concern for people, low concern for production. Question 3. What is the formula for expected value in a decision tree? Answer: expected value equals the sum of each outcome multiplied by its probability. Question 4. What must you always subtract from the expected value to get the net gain? Answer: the initial cost of the decision. Question 5. Name 2 factors that influence where a manager sits on the Tannenbaum-Schmidt continuum. Answer: any 2 from the nature of the task, the skill level of the workforce, the manager's personality, the organizational culture, or the time available to make the decision. How did you do? If you got all 5, you are in great shape. If you missed any, go back and review those sections. Let me leave you with a summary of the key points from today. Management is about doing things right. Leadership is about doing the right things. The Tannenbaum-Schmidt continuum has 7 specific points from tells to abdicates. Know them all and be able to identify them in a case study. The Blake-Mouton grid has 5 key styles. Memorize the coordinates, especially the difference between country club at 1-9 and team management at 9-9. Decision trees require you to calculate expected values and net gains. Always state your formula, always subtract the initial cost. And in evaluation, always weigh quantitative data against qualitative factors like stakeholder resistance, employee morale, and corporate image. This topic rewards students who can apply theory precisely to context. So when you're reading a case study, don't just think this manager is democratic. Think, where exactly on the Tannenbaum-Schmidt continuum are they? What coordinates on the Blake-Mouton grid? What are the implications for motivation and productivity? That level of precision is what separates a grade A from a grade B. Thanks so much for listening to Business Boost. Good luck with your revision, and remember, every mark counts. See you next time.